This is episode 488. Here's an unpopular idea that I'm guessing you haven't heard yet. What if HRT and bioidentical hormones are just another trend that feeds off the fear of aging and getting older? Just like skincare, just like makeup, and just like Botox. With doctors to naturopaths recommending HRT as the only way to not live in hell forever, I often wonder, have people forgotten that medications have side effects and artificially manipulating the hormones of the body might not be the best thing? On this episode, we have this exact discussion, one that no one seems to be having, and I do that with a women's hormone coach who holds a degree in traditional Chinese medicine and postgraduate studies in naturopathy and functional medicine, plus over 15 years in private practice. In this episode, we cover incorrect use of HRT, the social narratives that make women fear aging, the important utility of grandmothers and the matriarch in our society, and we debunk a few ludicrous ideas that circulate about menopause, pushed by the attractive famous influencers that bang on about this stuff. This episode is likely going to be considered controversial, so listen and let me know what you think. Even as a scientist and nutritionist, I was secretly trapped in binge eating and hooked on sugar. And let's be real, the so-called solutions can feel overwhelming. Calorie counting, restrictive diets, weight loss pills, surgery, and even injections. I'm Maddie Lansdowne, and the truth is, more nutrition facts aren't the answer. It's understanding why we eat the way we do. And you don't need to be perfect to achieve great health either. That shift changed everything for me, and now I share it here as the host of the Real Weight Loss Coach podcast, where it's my mission to help 1 million people break free from the yo-yo diet cycle for good by bringing you the conversations that really matter in nutrition, health, and psychology. And I'm not afraid to challenge mainstream health advice when it doesn't stack up. Are you ready? Let's begin. What's up, my healthy friends? Here with me today, I've got friend and all-round good time, Dr. Joanna McMeekin, and she talks to a group of relatively confused women and the occasional lost husband in the space of hormone and vaginal health, often leaning right into perimenopause and menopause conversations, which we're probably going to do today. Jo is, as you will hear, an Aussie, but now living in Mexico, which is awesome, and I'm super jealous of that. She's a mother of two, and most importantly, she's self-proclaimed as an average hula hooper, or above average, if you like. And a fun fact, I was the only witness at her wedding. What a riot of a party that was. Jo, welcome.
That's true. You completely, I was all prepared for my, thank you for having me, Maddie Lansdowne. But now I'm like, oh shit, yeah, you were at my wedding. My shotgun wedding after 20 years of being together.
Yeah, what an interesting scenario. I've never been included in that kind of...
You were actually... There were two, because legally you have to have two, but the other was just the celebrant's husband, who then we were... Because we were laughing about the shotgun wedding nature of it, the elopement that it was, we're going to have to totally fill in the context now because everybody's like, why is this woman alone? But he ran and got his guitar and sang Love Me Tender.
Yeah, that's right.
For the chapel in Vegas. So, yes, Duncan and I had been together for 17, 18 years at the time, but it was just to make the paperwork easier to apply for our visas for Mexico, because I said to him, we'll just do you. You're the primary applicant, and then we three would be the dependents if we're married. Otherwise, I have to do an independent one, and I hate paperwork. So I was like, fuck it, let's get married. And it sounds really not romantic at all, but... Because we were of the opinion that, you know, we had kids and a house and all the things that you sort of template build together, and was like, oh, we kind of skipped step one, which is to get married. Is it really necessary? And we thought it wasn't, and it isn't. But after getting married, we were like, oh, we kind of get it now. And it's because we've now been together for so long that there is no place where he stops and I start. Like, we wouldn't be the people that we are today without the influence that we've had on each other for the last 20 years. So even if we got divorced or separated, we're not individual anymore. We are individual, but we also have this imprinting on each other that we can never get rid of. And I wouldn't want to, because anyone who knows my husband knows he's like the best dude in the world.
It's like you're totally symbiotic.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm probably the parasite living on the... he's He'd be like the host and I'm the parasite.
I'm curious. He said, like, you got married and then you said, oh, I got it. Like, what did you get? Like, what changed? Like, what was the, after so long together, like, what changed?
I think that there's something to be said for the declaration and the understanding, because I guess, you know, we're not the type of people, I'm certainly not the type of person to speak a vow lightly. And even though I'm not religious, so I don't need to get up and stand before God, because I was brought up Christian, but we weren't a practicing, well, like most Australian families, kind of half-assed agnostic.
Yeah.
And so the religious aspect wasn't there for me. And in terms of the eyes of the law, we were in a common law relationship. So I was like, what's the point? And now I sort of understand that you make that decision that this is the person that you're going to front up and do life with. And the symbolism of it, like I said, there's no place where sort of he stops and I start. It's like, that's the symbol of the ring, isn't it, that you wear to remind you of the eternal bond that you have. And so I got that part of it. Hand fasting, all those sorts of that, because we've done it through all sorts of cultures in history, is that we have made these proclamations and declarations in front of people, like speaking into existence is important. So yeah, that it felt different afterwards.
Yeah. Thanks for answering that. You know, I'm just thinking of like a fantastic segue based on where we're going to go with this conversation, and divorce rates go up during menopause. Right? Because of all sorts of different reasons. And we're going to talk about that today. But HRT, I've had the conversation with, like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 different doctors, wellness experts, hormone experts on this podcast about HRT. So just to sort of get us going, what are your thoughts on HRT?
So the reason that I wanted to talk about this topic and not something that I normally talk about is because I'm starting to just, it's like a runaway train out there. And maybe my algorithm is kind of skewed because of the work that I do and what I'm interacting with online, and that's sort of the hashtags I use and whatnot. But it's really quite scary. I have a couple of things that I, look how prepared I am for this podcast. I made notes. So I want to read out a comment that I read in a post I read in a Facebook group, because I spend quite a lot of time in Facebook groups trying to understand, like, what are the issues that women in this age group are facing. It helps me understand what kind of content I can put out. It helps me because I'm 44 and having a pretty easy time of it. So I'm trying to get my head around what women are struggling with. And also, like, you can find people who need help in Facebook groups and stuff. You know how it is. So this woman posted, I'm interested in your feedback. I'm 54 and still getting regular periods, much to my surprise. About 2 years ago, I booked an appointment to see a gynecologist that specializes in HRT, figuring I'd definitely be in need by then. I went the other day and she said no to HRT because I still have my period and would still be producing hormones. I sleep well. I have no hot flashes. My once crazy libido is pretty much gone other than mid-cycle. And I'm also suffering some dryness. I'm pretty sure she means vaginal dryness, but not horrible. Moods are good. I asked about getting on bioidentical HRT for brain and heart protection, and she said that it's not a proven thing yet and doesn't suggest it. She said the main reason she puts people on HRT is hot flashes and sleep. I'm confused, I guess. It seems like even people in their 30s in perimenopause are getting prescribed HRT. She said there's still so much that's not proven and the benefit has to outweigh the risk. And I was like, that is a good doctor.
Yeah.
Well, the first like 30 comments were like, she doesn't know what she's talking about. This is other women in the group with no medical training, by the way. You need to get a new doctor. She's clearly not up on the latest research. This is an outrage. And it was really apparent that this woman who has no symptoms, who has presented to her doctor asking for endocrine therapy, right, in the face of no symptoms, she actually sounds like quite a healthy woman.
Yeah.
And the stats are that 75 to 80% of women are going to go through menopause like this, because that's, we'll get into it, but doesn't that make sense? Like, every woman, if she lives long enough, will go through menopause. It really should just be a gradual sort of change of the hormonal profile and an adjustment to a new normal. 25% of women, roughly, it goes a bit haywire, and that's where they may benefit from some intervention like HRT. But we have healthy women going to their doctors demanding, and one of I commented, I was like, I think she's right, and did a little thing. I got a little bit of hate for that, someone telling me it was misinformation and
of course.
That I was, yeah, right. And then another lady commented and she said, oh, thanks for saying this, because what I said was, look, you're getting older. And so you'll need to look after your brain and you'll need to look after your bones and you'll need to look after your cardiovascular system. And there are ways you can do that. Enough protein, calcium supplement, magnesium, eating enough fat, fasting, you know, all the things that we may touch on that you talk about a lot. So your listeners are probably all really familiar with just general health protective things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you don't have any major systemic symptoms, you probably don't need systemic HRT. I would chat to her about vaginal estrogen. But before that, you might just try like a vaginal moisturizer, because dryness will get worse, not better. So you need to do something about that. And this one woman was like, oh, thank you so much for this comment, because I went to my GP and she basically badgered her GP into giving her estrogen. The GP was like, you don't need it, you don't need it, you don't need it. This is another woman.
Yeah.
And finally the GP was like, fine, have your prescription. And she's like, I thought I was going to feel amazing. I thought I was going to feel like, oh, like, and all that happened was she got fat because she didn't need the estrogen. Yeah. And I'm like, so why, what is happening that healthy women are asking for? It's like they're asking for vitamin C. This is endocrine therapy. This is hormone therapy. So then you've got this kind of whole dialogue that's going on online. And I would like to read a little excerpt from a fit bro influencer guy with over 500,000 followers on Instagram who says, and I quote, or his ChatGPT, by the way, because his stuff is so obviously written badly by ChatGPT. Doctors will happily blame your brain fog, hot flashes, weight gain, and exhaustion on stress or aging. Meanwhile, your hormones are crashing, wrecking your brain, heart, bones, and muscle, and no one's telling you the truth. The real risk isn't HRT. The real risk is doing nothing while your body falls apart. And I'm like, this is the problem that we've got here, is this kind of fear-mongering and then the over-promising of the menopause, which is what these self-appointed HRT fanatic doctors, I think there's like 5 or 6 of them called the menopause. They're all like on Oprah and stuff talking about the benefits of HRT and specifically estrogen. Has really stirred up a storm online. And what you've got, because we live in this clickbaity soundbite culture where it's like sex sells, right? You have to grab attention. And so there's no nuance in the discussion. And these women who are out there to begin with searching for information, because some of them are falling through the cracks of the system, right? That they're not well supported and that we're not educating women about. I think it's changing, but there has been kind of like this forgotten wasteland that the midlife women wind up in. So I don't blame them for looking for answers and information, but this is what they're finding. And I feel like it's a runaway train. And I just want to kind of have a discussion about it without the hype, you know?
Yeah, well, me too. Like, I'm glad you're here, because the thing that, especially in the natural health space, like whether it be TCM or naturopathy or nutrition or whatever, is that it seems like all of us kind of agree that most pharmaceutical medications come with a list of questions and side effects and challenges. And most natural health people, when you talk about medication, will either roll their eyes or be like, nah, we can fix it another way. Except HRT. Every single person I've had on this podcast, except maybe you, that we've had this conversation, people have said, you have to have HRT for the rest of your life, whether they're natural, whether they're medical. Everyone seems to agree with that, because the prolonging of a stage of life is more appealing than apparently what's on the other side, which is, I would argue, what is natural and normal, and maybe the consequences that we're experiencing now are a result of the cost of living a life that was perpetual stress. And do you have to pay that cost? Not up for me to decide, obviously. But the point is that it just seems like this is the one drug category that natural people and medical people are all like, you have to, because the other side or during menopause is just so horrific. Just avoid it at all costs. Why wouldn't you want to feel 25 at 60?
So I'm not against anything, Maddie, except dickheads, right? Don't be a dickhead. But other than that, I'm not against anything. And I think that healthcare is really individual, and we're all, it's that whole thing about everyone's got the same 24 hours in a day. Yeah, but but they don't have the same resources.
Mm.
So when we look at someone who, if they're struggling through the menopausal transition, we sort of can say, all right, well, you need to drastically reduce your stress and you need to get more sleep, and you need to do blah, 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 all these things. But if they are a single mum with four kids, or they've got like an abusive partner, or I don't know, like there could be anything going on that's making it hard for them to do all of that at once, or it's making it hard for them to do the thing that would shift the needle the most, like quitting their job, for example, because I would argue that a lot of people should just quit their job because it's sucking the life out of them every day slowly. But that's not everyone can do that. And one of the things that's really important during this phase of life is slowing down a little bit and becoming a bit introspective. And not everyone can do that because either they don't have the skills, because there are some skills to turning inward, they don't have the support, or literally they've built themselves a prison where they're mortgaged to the hilt, they've got two kids in private school, whatever it has to be, and they're like, I just couldn't quit my job right now. So then it's like, okay, if they're having 30 hot flashes a day, they're barely sleeping, they're bursting into tears in board meetings and they're a C-level executive, et cetera, maybe we go in with some HRT, get things stabilized, and then we talk about how are we going to look at your life holistically and figure out what got you to that point. And it's interesting you said before about the divorce rate being really high. And the answer to that is, oh, yeah, because their hormones have gone off and so we just need to give them more hormones and shut them up. And actually what could be happening, just a possibility, is that estrogen being the hormone of appeasement, the hormone that allows you to put everybody else's needs ahead of your own. Because, I mean, we were talking before about how fulfilling it is having a baby, having children, and it is. But they make a lot of noise. And if you could ignore that noise, you would put it on a rock and be like, I'll be back later. But we can't, women can't ignore it. It puts our blood pressure up and we're bonded. Estrogen helps with all of that. And so as that starts to slip away, and probably now is a good time to talk about it from the Chinese medicine framework. They call it the second spring in Chinese medicine. The first spring being puberty, where a woman, like a young girl, blossoms into womanhood and becomes reproductive. And then the second spring, so when you go through puberty, the kind of pathway to heaven opens up and the heaven sends down the Tiangui, the heavenly water, to the woman's heart. And there is a connection between the heart and the uterus. And the heart turns the heavenly water into blood and it goes down into the uterus where it nourishes the fetus, or it has the capacity to nourish a baby and grow a baby. At menopause, or during the perimenopausal transition heading to menopause, have your listeners had the definition of like the difference between perimenopause and menopause? Because this is another important point, that perimenopause and menopause being spoken about interchangeably, and they are different. So perimenopause is the lead up to menopause, which is a single day that marks 1 year since your last period. And then after that point, you're postmenopausal. So most of the symptoms that we associate with, air quotes, menopause are perimenopausal. And then there are some that can persist after that menopause, that day of menopause. But during that perimenopause transition, the connection between the heart and the uterus is starting to close. And that pathway that went down is rearranging to go up. So the woman maintains her connection to heaven. So the heavenly water still comes down into the heart, but it stays in the heart to nourish her spirit, because the spirit lives in the heart. And then she's able to fill out her destiny, which was whispered to us in the womb by the angels. That's what the Chinese philosophy says. And so what can happen at menopause is women become a bit more self-focused. And if they've got a bit of a deadbeat relationship going on, or they don't have good communication skills, let's not always blame the relationship. Like maybe they're no longer willing to just kind of keep the peace anymore, but they don't have the communication skills, or their partner doesn't have the communication skills to work through that and figure out what the new version of the relationship looks like, then of course it can sort of end in breakdown.
Yeah. And the interesting thing too is, I guess, as the, I guess, women are going through that phase where you could argue, I guess, in some aspects, they're maybe moving more into their masculine a little bit.
100%. Testosterone becomes like a dominant hormone, which primes women for leadership.
Well, and in that chapter, men are usually starting to lower their testosterone, right? In that chapter. So In theory, there should be a rebalancing of the relationship, but it looks different to how it looked for the last 50 years.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe it should too. Like,
totally. Yeah.
So I think that Esther Perel, who I think is just a fabulous human, like I can consume anything that that woman puts out, because even if I don't necessarily agree with it, I love how it gets me thinking. But she says she's best known for her work with infidelity, and she'll say to couples who are trying to work through like an infidelity, okay, well, your first marriage is over. Let's just accept that. Right. Like that's done. You now have the opportunity to move into a second marriage, and if you're lucky, it'll be with this same person, you know, so we can start again. And she believes that you have two or three relationships in your lifetime, and if you are very lucky, it gets to be with the same person because you have to iterate.
That's beautiful. In this HRT conversation, that I'm curious to inject the social aspect of society being afraid of aging.
Yes.
Because I think one of the narratives, which I sort of touched on before, but it is this idea that it's like, why wouldn't you want to prolong being 30 forever? And whenever, just like I said before as well about medications and concerns and long-term use and side effects, I'm thinking if somebody's prolonging a state of their physiology unnaturally for a long time, there has to be a fallout for that. There has to be a cost for that. And maybe there's not, and maybe we've found the utopia of medications or strategies to, you know, maybe this is the beginning of cyborgs, I don't know. But this idea that, like, society's so scared of wrinkles and aging and getting old, particularly for women, and the HRTs are part of keeping you young.
So my theory on this is because our culture is really bad at death. Right, we do not accept this idea of death. Death is bad and scary, and it's kind of absurd to me because it's the one thing we all have in common. We're born terminal. And in other cultures, it's kind of embraced, and it's seen not necessarily as an end. It's just an end to this, the physical in iteration of that person. Mm-hmm. But I think if you acknowledge and accept the fact that you're going to die, then it makes aging a lot easier because you realize that there is one alternative to not aging, and that's dying young, which is not what we want. And it's just a fact that you're going to die. So if you're pushing against that, you're always in resistance.
Mm.
And it's a zero-sum game. It's a losing battle. You're losing it from the day that you die. So people often say to me that I don't look my age. And I'm like, is that supposed to be a compliment? Like, I don't take it as a compliment because I see every day that I'm alive. So my dad died when I was only 29. He was only 65. And he was one of four children, and two of his other siblings died. I think my aunt was around 60 and my other aunt was only 40-something. So I've seen a lot of people that I cared about who didn't get to get old.
Mm.
And so if getting old is a really good thing because there's no other option, right? It's not like, is there a way I can stay young and be alive forever? No, you will die. And then if you don't accept and embrace that, you're going to be afraid of aging.
It's a good frame.
I remember Duncan and I were coming back from Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And they oversold excess baggage. So we couldn't get on the plane. They put us up in a hotel. Yeah, I know, right? Because they make so much money on excess baggage. And so they oversold excess baggage and they were like, right, you 15 at the end of the line, you can't get on this plane. And so they put us up at a hotel. And I remember watching this documentary. It was when reality TV was just coming out. And so it was some bizarre stuff. They got a group of a tribe from like New Guinea or somewhere, like the wilds, the jungle. And they took them to Beverly Hills and they put them in a gated community.
Oh my God.
Living with a family. I know. You can see why it's stuck in my mind. And I remember so clearly they were having a Botox party where the doctor came and like injected everyone with Botox. They all had their cocktails and it was like as waspy as shit. And you could see like these like tribal people all just like, what is happening? And the medicine man of the tribe was very fascinated.
Mm-hmm.
And he was explaining it to the chief. And he was like, they're putting something in her face to get rid of her wrinkles. And he was like, why? And he said, to make her look younger. And he was like, why? Like, they can't touch the life inside of her. What about the life inside of her? That doesn't change.
Mm.
And it's like, exactly. It really struck me that you can, and then there's that other guy on the internet who I saw a video of his, and he's like, you have two choices. You can look old or you can look weird, but you can't look young again.
Oh my God, that's so true.
But you can't look young again. You did that already. And he's like, you can look old and hot. Like, my wife does that all the time. But yeah, and if you think about it, like, there's just no way you can fight against the aging process. You are aging. You will die. And if you can't get your head around that because you're afraid, why are you afraid? Is it because you're not really living a life that's true to you? Do you not? This is a litmus test I put my own life through all the time, which is like, if I got given, it's a bit morbid, but if I got given a 6-month terminal diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
what would I be doing differently between now and 6 months' time?
What's on that list?
And if it doesn't match up, I change what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's a good way to live. It says a lot to me as well in regards to the woman in the Facebook group that put the post up that actually didn't really need help, how influential the narrative is that people just think they should be on it because I keep hearing about it.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's trendy. It's trendy to be on HRT. It's trendy to get your lips done. It's trendy to, you know, to do all of these things. And it's just, I mean, obviously big pharma's like laughing their way to the bank because they're like, we've made it popular and people online are debating about it all the time, and we've convinced everybody that if you don't have it, you're basically going to get old and die and hate your life.
Well, and I mean, it's really convenient, isn't it, that you put women on birth control for their whole reproductive years for a whole host of things, which, different topic, not going to get into it, but they are monthly repeat consumers up to the point where they go through menopause, and then they're no longer reproductive. They don't need it anymore because if they were on it for reproduction, it's not a problem anymore. And B, a lot of the problems that they went on it for were because of hormonal irregularities. That's why they were taking the pill to level it out. And so when those hormonal irregularities, the ups and downs, go away after menopause because it becomes a lot more stable, the postmenopausal state, then they don't need it anymore. So talking about lifetime value of the customer, how do you get, this is as if we were being very cynical, how do you then reclaim that revenue? You tell them that they need HRT until they die. So I wrote down, as I was trying to canalize my thoughts for this discussion, I wrote down some questions that I think women today at this moment are being asked to answer, whether or not they wanted to be asked these questions. And one of them is, do you believe that humans at this point in time have completely figured out the complex interactions and processes of our hormonal systems? Or is it more likely that this is just our best guess right now?
That one.
Right. So, well, I mean, I don't know. But unless you are pretty sure that what we know today about HRT and replacing your hormones for the rest of your life is absolutely 100% foolproof and true, it's a pretty big risk that you're taking. And the amount of stuff, I've been doing this a long time, Maddie, the amount of stuff that I've seen people change their tune on, by people, I mean like science and the medical community.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Loving what you're hearing? Make sure you're subscribed here on your favorite podcast app. Or there's even more waiting for you over on YouTube. On our channel, you'll get to see our fascinating guests demonstrate their techniques in real time. You'll see my animated explanation of complex health concepts made simple, plus all of those you had to be there moments that we mentioned in the show. The Coaching with Maddie episodes will be there too. We're also creating exclusive YouTube shorts, quick, powerful health tips you won't find anywhere else. And let's face it, if we're going to be doom scrolling, which we all do from time to time, you might as well make it worthwhile. Just search How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast on YouTube and hit subscribe to unlock the visual side of becoming a healthy friend of the show. Because sometimes you need to see it to believe it, and also to achieve it. The direct link is in the show notes below. Come and join our YouTube community. Yeah, I was going to say, I think the ability to do that by yourself or anybody, it comes with this idea that, like, this bird's eye view of timelines. And what I mean by that is to realize that everybody right now that thinks science is the most amazing thing, like when you sort of go up and observe the timeline, whatever that means, and you see how far we've come, you should also be able to identify that, oh, there's just as much time on the other side of my life of which we don't know and we're going to discover and think things are right and think things are wrong. And there's things that we thought were wrong a long time ago that are now right and vice versa. So I think it's really easy to get stuck in this sort of microscopic view of like, my life is the most progressive thing that will ever exist, so I better tap into the resources while they're here. And the furthest I can see back is maybe my grandparents.
Yeah, which, like, ironically, most of our grandmothers did great and didn't go on HIT. You know, like, my my grandmother was 96, sharp as a tack, never fractured a bone, like, heart health, didn't have a stroke, you know, all these things, didn't have breast cancer, all these things. So, but yeah, I think it's sometime in the last, I don't know, 20 years or so, we've really flipped around from, oh, we have some research that suggests this. This is really interesting. We will use that information as we operate cautiously and judiciously because we never know everything. But this is promising, this little piece of information over here, to, oh, a study says that this could be a thing. So now it is 100% correct. And if you have any questions about that or any doubts about that, you're anti-science.
You know? Well, I mean, that was obviously COVID, right? Is that it got to the point where it was, you know, controllable and punishable legally if you disagree, like, which it goes beyond science and curiosity and discovery, which I would argue is the essence of true science, is questions and discovery and exploration.
Well, isn't that, I mean, that's the whole... The whole scientific method is trying to disprove what you believe.
Well, assuming that you aren't already indoctrinated into one system of thinking.
Correct. Yeah. But so that was one question. Like, we don't have the longitudinal studies at the moment. They don't exist because we've only started to prescribe HRT like this very recently. So this cohort of women will give us those data.
Mm.
But as it stands, we have some suggestions around what they think that there are some potential benefits, but that is by no means like, oh, look at this 20-year study that we have. And also there are some ethical issues. They can't study things according to the good old, like, randomized, double-blind, gold standard things. Because when you're looking at risks of developing endometrial or breast cancer, you can't ethically run those experiments because it's unethical to put someone in a group where you could give them breast cancer. So
totally.
Right? So we don't actually have them. Another question I think is that, do you believe that the pinnacle of achievement for a biological human female is her reproductive capacity, or is that just one part of the female lifespan?
Good question.
Right? So that just ties into what you were talking about before, which is that why wouldn't you want to be 30 forever? That suggests that being 60 or 70 or 80 or 90 is less desirable, which is kind of funny because we have all these studies from all around the world that show that women are happier postmenopausally. They're happier than their younger counterparts, and they're happier than they themselves were when they were younger.
Which just makes general sense to me because the older I get, the less of a fuck I give.
100%. Yeah, 100%. And you also learn more and you mellow a bit, you know, like, you realize that you didn't know everything. You get humbled, I think, by life as well. So you can become, I guess you can go one of either way, but I think people become more open-minded because they've lived a lot, they've seen a lot. But also because of the hormonal profile changing, you have more self-focus. So you can, and your kids are grown up, they don't need you in the way, if you had kids, they don't need you in the way that they used to. So you can finally take that art class or that dance class, or you can take that trip to Europe that you always wanted to do but you couldn't afford it or it was never the right time. So then you've also got the grandmother hypothesis of evolutionary biology, which is that there are only two species that go through menopause. There's us and the whales. And I was talking to a marine biologist about this here, because where I live, it's on the coast and we get like whales and dolphins coming through all the time. And he was saying that when you observe their societies, it's it's a matriarchal society, and the bond between the grandmother whales and the male whales is so strong that when a grandmother whale dies, the calves, the younger males within her pod, many of them will die within 12 months of her passing away. Yeah, because the And there's no, they don't get sick or like there's nothing obvious. It's believed, the marine biologists believe that it's the emotional connection that they had to the matriarch. They basically just die of a broken heart. I know. So there's that. And because I was talking about why would we have evolved into menopause and why does it benefit the whales? And he said that it's a couple of things. One is that there's less competition for resource. Now that makes sense. Mm-hmm. If you've got a number of females competing for, because they compete for the healthiest male to, mm-hmm. you know, survival of the fittest, et cetera. And so if you've got the older females competing with the younger females, there's a lot of competition. So if the older females are no longer competing for reproductive rights, then that reduces that competition.
Mm-hmm.
But also there's the education that they educate, and the pods do better and the species did better with the matriarchs going through that reproductive shutdown. And so the evolutionary biologists believe that there is a benefit to our species when women stop being able to reproduce. And I mean, obviously, like, it's so energy dense to produce a viable egg every month. And that energy can go back into the female, who then can help the ones who are busy having babies and looking after babies and being pregnant. And you've got that matriarchal role where they've got that energy because it goes back into them, and they've got all that wisdom, and they can guide and they can direct. And then they can also, grandmothers spoil children.
Yeah.
And it's good for the, because the mother is so busy trying to protect and guide. And sometimes that can be in a conflict sort of a way. Whereas the grandmother has, we've shown in studies, there's a book called The Menopause Brain, which is amazing. And it shows that the menopausal brain has a greater capacity for empathy. So there's all of these markers that suggest that menopause is not an accident, and which basically brings me to my next question, which is, do you believe that our bodies are intelligently designed and that menopause is an evolutionary benefit, or do you believe, which is what we're being told, that we're outliving our ovaries, basically, that our ovaries atrophy and shrivel at 50 and we're only alive because of modern medicine?
I was about to get into rant mode on that point, because one thing that gets me fired up is this bullshit narrative of people that have not looked into history whatsoever to say, oh, it's because we only live till 70 or 80 in the last 50 or 100 years. And I'm like, judging by that, that means the species only started like 500 years ago. If, you know, it's like...
Duncan always says maths is a good way of sorting people out. Like
100%. And it's like we've literally got so much documentation of people that, you know, famous people, Socrates, you know, whoever it is that quoted stuff, or even general population data of people that lived, as long as they lived beyond birth, which is the main thing that modern medicine changed, which was fetal death, like and mm-hmm. newborn death. That was the thing that bumped the average life expectancy up. But that's the number that so many people use to justify, see, we're living longer. And it's like, no, we saved babies, not old women.
Yeah, and children. And some of that was because, we didn't have sanitation and children are more vulnerable. Or if you were in tribal situations, snakes, crocodiles falling off rocks or out of trees. Like
completely. You know. But this idea that women were meant to die at 45, mm-hmm. Is just bullshit. It's so wrong.
And then, so my question, this is, I got it, and I never get into it on Facebook these days. Like, I just know better, but I got into it in this particular comment thread. And I was like, why don't men's testicles atrophy at the same age then? Because they're the same gonadal organ. So what's up with that? She was like, oh, because men and women are different. I'm like, yeah, but what... Explain to me then, what about the process of, I mean, the testes are constantly manufacturing sperm.
Totally.
Constantly. So if it was just a case of wearing out, wouldn't they wear out faster? Like,
Totally. The other thing to what you said before about sort of the social and familial function of the grandmother or the matriarch of the family is, and I say this particularly after just going through with Yali, you know, she had a home birth and we did all of this very quote unquote naturally and drug free and all of that kind of stuff, which is great. And it's not to shame anyone who didn't do that, you know, disclaimers, whatever. But the idea is that Yali was meant to be surrounded by all of the older women to pass on the knowledge, and she should have been around, like all women, should have been around birthing women and all of that stuff to be normal and, you know, a collective of older women to go to be like, this is how it's going to go. Don't worry, we've got you. We're here. We've been there. And I would say that along with nuclear families and the separation of communities and blah, 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 is that that function of the matriarch has fallen away. And so this is adding to the narrative that, well, I've got no utility as an older woman because everybody's on their own journey and their doctor's got more knowledge and textbook wisdom than I could possibly ever have, despite, you know, every woman on the earth having 1,000 generations worth of birthing DNA within them, you know. But it just adds to this idea that there's no utility in older women.
Well, and I think something that I was writing about the other day was when I was like 21, I took a tram in Melbourne and I thought it must have been really crowded because there was this guy like basically with his dick on my shoulder. And I looked up because I was reading a book at the time and I looked up thinking this tram must be packed, only to find out that it was basically empty. And old mate was just standing there with his rubbing his dick on my shoulder. And I froze. Like I was so scared in that moment and just like what is happening. And I stood there with this creep rubbing his dick on my shoulder for like 3 or 4 stops. And then I just got off the train and some guy pulled his dick out while I was walking down Sydney Road. And I just like walked into the nearest shop and there were a couple of lovely old ducks in there and they made me a cup of tea. And cause I was shaking, I was only like 19 at the time or something.
Oh, bless you.
And yeah. And so I've also, through the course of my life, and I guess I'm lucky, have received unwanted male attention, like being out at bars and stuff. That happens to me less now. And I'm like so grateful. I'm so glad.
What an interesting lens to look at that through.
Read a book on a tram and no one puts their dick on my shoulder. So that's
also,
like
what
one
fucking idiots.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, and that's the argument to be made that men should be taught not to put their penises on people's shoulders. But
we need better patriarchs, right?
Precisely. But so not being under male scrutiny all the time is something that I think is great. And the other thing that I think is sad is that women are obviously tying their self-worth to this external validation because they're lamenting the fact that their hair is changing and it's not lustrous and thick and they might have to cut it. Like I cut mine because the water here didn't agree with it, but I also think it's changing, you know, and their skin is going crepey and they're getting fine lines and their fingernails are looking different. And it's like, yeah, because you're getting older. We age. Mm. It happens. And why is it making you sad? Why do you want to reverse that? Or do you want to look young or do you want to look healthy and vital?
Yeah.
And I think we all want to look healthy and vital, and you can do that in a way that someone's going to look at me and be like, well, you're 44, but you look healthy. You look good. I'm not trying to make someone believe that I'm 28 anymore. Why? Because I want them to want to sleep with me or because I want them to find me sexually attractive. Why? What do you honestly think that's the only worth that you bring to this world?
Yeah. Movies, Disney, series. There's lots of, content on the internet, on our TVs that would convince us that, yeah, the only utility is sexual appeal. And despite on some level knowing that's not true, marketing, advertising at bus stops, on your phone, everywhere is, you know, skinny, thin, tall, sexy women. And so if I'm not that, then what am I?
But isn't that a question that we should be like exploring? Like that's
completely
something that I would encourage people to ask themselves is where does my sense of worth come from? How much of it needs to be externally validated? Because, I mean, everybody needs external validation. It's not, I'm saying it's a bad thing. But
We're pack animals.
Yeah. If it's the thing that you're clinging to is how desirable you are and how, I mean, again, if you look at it from a slightly conspiratorial point of view, it's really good to convince women that they're most worthy from about 18 to 25, you know, like perky boobs, peak peak estrogen, peak reproductive capacity, and then it's all downhill after that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the commercial consumerist industry like Amazon wouldn't exist if women generally felt whole and amazing. You know, they wouldn't feel the need to fill the void with shopping and all of these other things, you know, theoretically.
And I would say that men are now, young men are now succumbing to that more than even when I was growing up. Because I was growing up, there were no like magazines or anything for men. It was all girls reading Dolly and Cosmo. And I don't know that there might have been like one men's magazine, but now there's a lot out there and there's, you've got influencers and fitfluencers who are on steroids. And so I think, you know, that men are coming under fire for that as well now, our younger men. So totally. I'm thinking, I always think, what would people be thinking? What's the yeah, but that the listeners might be thinking right now? And it could be, yeah, but what about aging well, aging strong, aging in a healthy fashion? And doesn't HRT help with that? Doesn't it protect your bones, your brain, your heart? And there is some emerging evidence to suggest that, yes, it does, but it's not the only thing that you can do. And in these studies as well, they don't put HRT up against a ketogenic diet, healthy lifestyle, community. There's all these socio-emotional factors as well. And they're not doing a study of HRT versus a really healthy person. They're like HRT or nothing. Yeah. And then saying, well, look, it helped with maintaining muscle mass. Well, yeah, because estrogen is anabolic, and of course it would, but so does lifting weights. So does eating enough protein. You know, and to say as well that I find it really interesting that they've made the association that because women are at higher risk of osteoporosis and dementia and a few of these conditions, that it must be the decline in estrogen, as opposed to what else could be going on. Well, men tend to do more manual labor, I would say.
Yeah, and totally.
Lift heavier things. And women have been eating low-fat diets since the 50s, which is not good for your brain health.
I would even say that's leaning on the side of like being more diplomatic. Also, all the sugar you've been eating, all the vegetable oil that's destroying your brain, the statins you've been on because your doctor thinks cholesterol's bad. P.S. Your nervous system and brain have now been deprived for decades of a consistent cholesterol supply. So it's like, plus those things, you know.
Well, and it's interesting that you bring up the nervous system because I think this is like key to the air quotes crisis that we're having, this perimenopause crisis. So I think we're a victim of clever marketing. You know, it's the people that you're hearing from online are not necessarily the most knowledgeable. They're the ones that are the most marketable. Yeah, yeah. Or you know, and I would also argue like they're generally good looking because there's a lot of brilliant researchers. And
that's why I haven't gone viral yet. Damn it. I need HRT.
But like Geraldine Pryor, she's like a bona fide researcher. And I saw an interview with her and she's older, right? So it was the classic, you could see this much of her head from here up the roof. And she's got like glasses and gray hair and she's brilliant, but she's not as marketable as, you know, some of these other members of the Menno Posse who are a lot more glamorous and they've got teams behind them that know how to market. So yeah, I've just derailed myself because I can't remember what point I was going to make then, but that's fine.
Well, I derailed you, I think, there because we're talking about nervous system and
that's
the other.
That's what it was. Yeah. So yeah. I think that, I mean, we have three different types of estrogen that women produce. There's estradiol, which is the one that's highest during the reproductive years. Then there's estriol, which is the one you make when you're pregnant. And then estrone, which is the one that you produce when you're postmenopausal. And it's produced in the adrenal glands, in the adrenal system. And so it is, I think estradiol is like 10 times more potent. It's a lot more potent. So when you're going through the transition, the brain loves estrogen. Lara Bryden, she uses a quote, which I think she got from someone else, that says estrogen is like chocolate for the brain. The brain loves it. And so when your body goes, here's some estrone, the brain's like, wait, what?
No.
What is that? Because it's used to estradiol, which is so much more potent. But your body switches to producing this estrone using your nervous system, your adrenal system, and you can synthesize estradiol from the estrone. So it's not like you stop making these hormones altogether. It's just that the mechanism differs. And of course, the levels are very, very different. But if your nervous system is fried, then it can't pick up the slack. The ovaries pass the baton back to the adrenals. And if they are hammered, they're not going to be able to take on that role.
Based on what you're talking about in regards to fried nervous system and the mechanism that changes in regards to that hormone production, what that makes me think of, and I have this conversation a lot, is that as women go through this perimenopause to postmenopausal phase, they gain a bit of weight or they gain a bit of softness. Do you think that's inevitable and an important part of it for the hormonal support to have a few extra kilos or pounds?
Yeah, because estrone is also synthesized in the adipose tissue.
Yeah.
As well. Yeah, for sure. And also, if you have more weight on your body, then your bones are moving more weight, moving more body weight. So that helps with maintaining and preserving bone density as well, because you're heavier. I also think there's an aspect of redistribution. And in the hormone repair manual, Lara Bryden writes about that. And she says that fat on the bum and the hips is actually healthy,
yeah,
but fat on the abdomen is not healthy. So understanding that if you're redistributing to the bum and the hips, that that's a good sign. If it's going on the belly, maybe there's some metabolic challenges going on there that you need to look into. And I also just think women aren't lifting heavy enough.
I agree.
I was trying to think of how to say it like nicely, but no, they're just not lifting heavy enough.
You know, obviously not doing injuries, but you often see, just like you mentioned with the low fat era, I also think that embedded in that chapter of society, and we've got a bit of a hangover from it, is the fear that lifting weights will mean that women end up bulky.
Oh my God, if only it was that easy.
You're telling me, and I'm a man that, like, I don't, the Lansdowne jeans, we don't really hold much body fat anyway. I wish I could gain some more muscle, like, as in, you know, easily.
Yeah.
Like, it's a full-time feeding commitment to gain that much muscle.
And the protein's the other thing, like the under-eating of protein.
Yes.
That goes on. And I think, too, we have some dialogue out there about what you can do from 40s onwards to promote health that isn't HRT, but it's vague. People say, like, prioritize protein. Well, what does that actually mean? That means calculate your protein needs, which previously the calculation was 0.8 of a gram of protein per kilo of body weight per day.
I mean, it's too low for anyone.
Well, that's what you need to avoid illness.
Die.
Under that, and you have, what's the disease of low protein? What's it called? I can't remember it. But basically,
sarcopenia or cachexia happens. Like,
exactly. So below 0.8. So that doesn't mean that 0.8 is what you should be eating. That's like any lower than that, and you're going to die. You know,
so totally.
It's closer to 1.2 to 1.8 grams of protein per kilo of body weight per day. So when you do that calculation, and then you're like, all right, so what does that mean? For most women, it sort of means about 100 grams of protein a day, which is 30 odd grams each meal. It's a lot more than you would think it is. It's 6 or 7 eggs, you know. So you've got women who are like, I eat a lot of protein. I have 2 eggs for breakfast. I'm like, and what else? So prioritize protein means calculate how much protein you need and eat that first. So if you need a whole chicken breast, and you would normally have half a chicken breast because you're also going to have some rice and some broccoli and, you know, you wouldn't be able to eat a whole chicken breast if you were doing that. Have less rice and broccoli. Eat the whole chicken breast first. And then if you still feel hungry, have a small amount of rice and broccoli. I think that prioritize protein is vague. Lift heavy. What does that mean? Well, if you work with a trainer, you'll know that it's that about rate of perceived exertion. And I am not an expert in this. I just have picked it up because I've trained myself. But my understanding of it is that if you work out at an RPE of around 7 to 9, which means you could do another couple of reps, but you'd be going really close to failure, that is the best for building muscle. And if you work out maximally, like you go to to failure, that does something else to the muscle, and you can do light weights, but lots of them. And I think that trains endurance over. They all have benefit. But the perimenopausal women lift heavy. It means heavy for you, which means when you are weightlifting in your set, you should have only about 2 or 3 reps left in the tank for each set. So that could mean you do 15 on the first set, but then you only do 12 on the second and 10 on the final set because you're getting more and more tired. And then you add in what they call progressive overload, which is like you've got to keep upping the weight over time. And ultimately, if you train consistently and for long enough, you really do need to get to the gym. You need to get under a barbell because you have to start lifting decent amounts of weight. And I think, yeah, there are reasons why that's not happening.
Totally. The other thing I would add to it, which is interesting, because cultures that often eat on the floor or have meditation yoga practices built in have a much lower fall risk. And so in the West, as we get older, and that then leans into the osteoporosis and fractures and that kind of thing. But simply getting up from the floor with unaided as you get older, you know, along with doing this weights. And so the point is you could be doing yoga, you could be doing, you know, some form of Pilates, but just exercising, stretching your body on the floor and getting up and down off the floor, which you could just totally integrate to that gym process or the weights process.
But just watch TV on the floor. Like
completely.
You know, sit down cross-legged, do your stretching. This is what I tell, because it's all about habit stacking. When I'm working with women and we're trying to introduce new habits, I'm like, do you watch a bit of TV in the evening? Well, that's the perfect time to do some stretching, because a lot of them need to do some stretching. So, or sit down on the floor, as you say, cross-legged, and get up from the floor. And also, the risk with osteoporosis, there's a really good book. If people who are listening to this think, yeah, I'm open to HRT, but I kind of resonate with this conversation. It does seem to be like really hyped at the moment. Mm-hmm. There's a book called Estrogen Errors, which is, I think, a kind of a clap back to the book Estrogen Matters.
And Googling.
It's very good. Pretty feminist, but in it, she talks about how they say, you know, 1 in 4 women is going to develop osteoporosis, but that risk increases the older you are. So it's actually at around age 80 where you have a 25% chance. And the risk factors have all been enacted before they turned 50, when estrogen was high. So it's like what you do earlier in your life matters more than what you do around that sort of 50 age group. So when you hear this statistic, 1 in 4 will get osteoporosis, the older that you get, that's around 80 years of age. And another risk factor for osteoporosis is age.
Yeah, well, it seems to happen.
Yeah.
But I think, as we're highlighting by this conversation, is that there's lots that you can do to make it not, you know, just an insufferable mess.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's the other thing, is that if you go out there and you look for the positive aspects of menopause and aging, it seems to me to be really polarized. It's like either you're going to dry up and shrivel up and just disappear into crusty insignificance unless you take HRT, or there's the other group who are talking about it as a rite of passage, as transitional, as an undoing to reform and to step into your power and to find out, like, who the fuck are you? You know, like and this is the final bit of your life, right? Like you went through the first third. These are not equal thirds, by the way, because someone called me out on that the other day. They were like, a third? I was like, they're not equal thirds, but first third, you're a girl. Middle third, you're a young woman with a family, reproductive. And then final third, post-reproductive, and that takes you up to death, right? So it's about figuring out who you are and stepping into your power. But these groups are very like long, gray hair, no makeup, beating a drum in the wood, topless
sort of thing.
So, you know, which I love.
Shaman energy.
Yeah. And I think that doesn't resonate with a lot of women as well, because they're like, but I still, you know, I don't want to have too bad crow's feet and I like wearing red lipstick. And so where's my group? Where do I fit in? And I think, you know, I'm hoping to fly the flag for the middle ground.
I think somebody needs to. But for anybody listening that's like, Jo is awesome, I need more of her, where are people going to find you on the internet?
The usual places. I have a website, and Instagram is probably where I'm most active. I am on Facebook, and I do have a Facebook group, a perimenopause Facebook group that people can join. Although I'm still learning how to create a good online community, so it's a little bit quiet in there. But if you prefer Facebook to Instagram, there is a Facebook location.
Oh, maybe we should chat. I might have some tips on to help with that.
Ooh.
All right, so now what we're going to do to take us out, we're going to do our little Real Talk segment, going to fire some questions, you're going to give me some amazing answers, and then we're going to finish. So does that sound good?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, here we go. Question one, what's something that you believe now that made you laugh 10 years ago?
You shouldn't necessarily trust the government.
What's one habit you'd be embarrassed to admit that you still have?
So I went viral I think it was the early days of Reels. It was a reel that got over 10 million views. And in it, I was telling people not to drink coffee on an empty stomach. And I still tell people not to do that. But I do have a half calf several times a week when I first get up.
What's one supplement habit or wellness trend you think is overhyped?
I think we covered that today, didn't we?
HRT.
Yeah.
What's a rabbit hole topic you think more people should explore?
Pharmaceutical industry. Yeah, there's a book called Green Pharmacy. And I think just realizing the origins of the pharmaceutical industries just helps people to be informed consumers.
In 20 years from now, what do you want to be known for?
I want to be known for helping people to live really fabulous lives, lives that they feel connected and plugged into. And I hope that people who've had an interaction with me leave that interaction feeling better than before.
Can confirm you're already doing that.
Aww.
Question six is, if everything you've ever said was deleted, what's one sentence that you'd want to leave people with?
Your very existence on this planet is so unlikely. There's like 300 to 400 trillion sperm in a single ejaculate. And if anyone had made it to the egg that wasn't the one that did, or if it had been a different egg, you wouldn't be you. So it's such a crazy accident that I have to believe it was meant to be. Don't waste your life.
Oh, mic drop. That was awesome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, because we were talking about this beforehand. You and I have been talking about doing a podcast together since before COVID.
I know, so, which is like, what, 6 years?
6 years?
It finally happened. Hopefully it is not 6 years before the next one.
No way, man. I'm excited.
Amazing. Well, thanks for being here, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.